is 1010 KXXT.
And welcome back again. This is Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And thank you for, from, I should say, right now, we're Heitman Lewis. That was Tiffany Broberg. She is awesome. An estate planner. And I think if her husband was listening, definitely Valentine's Day today. Okay. So I'm just helping out the women of Phoenix, Arizona. Right, Kurt? Yeah, he gives us a thumb up. Anyway, this is Understanding Autism. This is great. It's always great to see this young man, Paul Loudon, flying in all the way from Texas. Hi, Paul. How are you?
Doing great, thanks.
This is great. It's how was the flight?
Oh, the flight was fine. A little busy. I think we had some ASU people coming back from a track meet.
Really? A track meet?
I saw a lot of track jackets and a ton of ASU people coming in Sunday.
Wow, that's amazing. How's the weather out in Houston?
Changing every day.
It's nice out here,
warm,
though.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Isn't it
here.
Nice coming in here? The last week, right? And let's introduce Kimberly Isaac.
Hi.
Oh, good. That was a delayed hi. The weather's been beautiful. That's why people love Phoenix. This is Phoenix weather, isn't it?
It's really nice.
What would you say? 75, maybe 80 degrees at most?
Yeah, I'm going to go somewhere in that range for sure.
Blue skies.
It's very pretty out.
Clear. You could see for miles and miles, and I'm slowly hypnotizing you. Okay, so we got a great show today. Of course, this is a very important topic because the stats are alarming, right? In terms of, it seems to be becoming more common, the autism spectrum, and that, of course, you described one time as maybe just the measurement device, you know, how they measure, but nevertheless, it's, what was it again, 1 in 99?
Well, you know, the last time I checked, it was 1 in every 95.
Oh, geez. And with males, it's even more alarming.
Right. Three out of every 4 people diagnosed are males.
Jeez, that is just astonishing. So for our listeners, Kimberly, you're up first. You have a great background. You've been doing this, of course, for how long? Like over 12 years?
About almost 14 years.
14.
Or 14.
Wow, you were just a young whippersnapper. I remember that, of course.
I know.
Because I've known you, I won't say how many years, but I have known you. Hey, do we have the radio on out there?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to wave to our live audience. Okay, he's waving back. I mean, they're waving back. Okay, so anyway, let's go back to your background. Tell us a little bit about RDI, how you got into this, and because it's obviously your passion, and you're very compassionate about it.
Yes, I am very passionate about it. Just to give a little bit of background, is I've been in the field for 14 years, and I am an RDI certified consultant, and I have been for about 6 years now. And I specialize in working with teens and adults on the autism spectrum, and I love what I do. I just really value supporting others in their own learning process.
And you're always learning and growing. You're getting a master's degree. You are amazing.
And just for a quick reference, for those who are listening for the first time or whatnot, we talked a little bit about what RDI is last month, and we'll probably be going into more detail on it in future shows.
Oh, yeah. Good.
We're going to do a big RDI,
shout
probably
out.
2 or 3 part show. But for those who are interested and want to do a little bit of research ahead of time, you can certainly go to www.rdiconnect.com.
Oh, that's a good idea. Because there are two pretty much different camps, right? And somewhat different theories about the autism spectrum.
Not just two camps.
Is there more?
There's several camps. But RDI is one approach that I have found to be really useful for the people that I work with. And I'm going to be looking forward to sharing about that in greater detail in a future show.
Nice.
And just to move along a bit, I'm one of the people she's worked with. I am 28 now, actually. It was my birthday
just
last month.
Birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
So I'm 28, and I was diagnosed when I was 23 with Asperger's, and Kim has been working with me for a while now.
A while, yeah.
And you're the co-star.
I am indeed.
This is very good. All the way from
co-host, maybe
my wingman.
Yeah, that's right. Remember what was it? Top Gun. Yeah. Ever see that movie?
Oh yes.
Great movie, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure I want to be Goose though.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, nobody in this room is going to be Goose. Okay.
How about Iceman? Val Kilmer.
He was cool.
He was pretty cool.
All right.
Which one was Goose, by the way? Oh, he died, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. That's why we don't.
But
want
he could
Goose.
Play a mean piano.
Yeah.
That's
wasn't
true.
Meg Ryan in the movie too?
Oh
yes.
Yeah.
And, of course, Kelly McGillis.
Yes.
Wow. Long I want to be an actor. Okay. Anyway, we got a great show today. The topic is if when your children hear that they, or when they get a, receive a diagnosis, what do you do? And where do you start? Because that's got to be a little shocking, I suspect, for the parents.
Well, that's a big reason why we want to do this show is when you receive shocking news like that, your first step is, what do I do now? And, well, we can't give you the definitive, here's a list of what things to do in what order. It always helps to sort of have a list of ideas or just, you know, something that can, you can use as a starting place. Just stop, step back. This is not the end of the world. You know, what should I do? Here are some ideas.
And it certainly, you know, to parents may feel like the end of the world. And as Paul said, it's not. It feels that way. And it's scary and it's overwhelming. And it's sad. I mean, you become extremely concerned about the future of your child and how you're going to parent a child that needs some different things. And you start to doubt yourself. Will I be able to help, you know, this child? And so it's really important that you, well, for one, you should allow yourself to feel what you're feeling. It's a really natural and normal response. I mean, you've been given some news that you probably never would have dreamed of hearing. You know, a lot of times people think, oh, that happens to other people, but not to me. And, you know, it's okay to be, you know, upset, but it's also really important not to panic. And I think that's a pretty important distinction that I emphasize greatly with people who just find out that their kids have been diagnosed. Panicking leads you to do things that are much less typical than you would. And, you know, when you're trying to provide an atmosphere and create opportunities for your child to live as typical as possible, living in panic mode, you actually inadvertently do the opposite. So it's really important not to panic.
And another big thing to remember is this isn't a sprint to a finish line. This is a marathon. You need to look at the fact that you're just trying to move forward. If you can't take the big steps that you want to take now, concentrate on the smaller things that aren't going to overwhelm you. But just keep remember, as long as you're moving forward, you're getting somewhere.
Well, that totally makes sense. I suspect the panic that people might feel is also a lack of understanding, and that's what this program is about, to give more understanding.
Yes.
Well, that's a big question. Is if you've just received the diagnosis of autism, what does that mean? What is autism and what isn't autism?
Right. And it's important to recognize the panic. And again, I mean, it's not something, you know, you don't tell yourself, oh, I shouldn't be panicking. I mean, it is certainly something to be proactive about. But again, realizing, okay, am I operating out of panic or am I operating out of deliberate actions is a really important question. And the other thing that is very important when it comes to the topic of panic is because people with autism have such a hard time relationally, you know, referencing people's emotions and intentions and things like that. If you're conveying panic, it's going to be very confusing to your kids, and it could actually increase the household anxiety.
Well, that totally makes sense. And, you know, sadly, I think some of the media, maybe movies, have added to some of the anxiety, showing what maybe part of what autism is, but nowhere near the whole spectrum,
well,
right?
Even if, I mean, assume the best possible case that they are trying to present a good, you know, not hyperbole-filled vision of autism. It's still true that only the worst cases are going to be newsworthy. You know, someone coping with it well, someone having, you know, advancement in their therapy just isn't news. So even when they're only presenting things, they don't present the millions of drivers who don't get in wrecks. They present the ones that do, and this is the same case. So what a lot of people see of autism, even with the best intentions, are the worst-case examples of it.
And that can scare people.
Oh, that can be terrifying.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, Paul, shock or relief when you were diagnosed?
Oh, for me, absolute relief.
I remember you talked about that one of the first shows, And maybe describe that, because this could be part of education, what you went through, because there is a possibility of relief and not continued worry about what's
true.
Going on.
That's true.
For me, part of it was that when I got my diagnosis, I understood enough about Asperger's that I could see how it related. I sort of thought that that's what I might have had, which is why I then sought a diagnosis. I read about it, and the description sort of resonated with me. And having confirmation of that was relief. But a large part of that was I had spent 23 years of my life not quite understanding the world and the people around me. And there was a disconnect that built up over time that created a lot of stress, depression, and other things. And having this confirmation that it wasn't necessarily something I was doing wrong so much as something that, you know, I needed to be attacking from a different direction, something that had a description that I could look at and sort of plan for, meant that I had a starting point. It no longer meant that I was falling behind somewhere, but that I knew where I was to go forward from.
Well, that, you know, that makes sense. And, you know, and that's sad in a way, but it's a happy ending, of course, is that how many others weren't as fortunate as you right now, not knowing where they are in the spectrum, or if they're even on the spectrum, and they'll continue thinking something may be wrong with them when it's really not.
Well, there is definitely an increase currently in diagnosing adults, you know, late in life too. I mean, even 50s, 60s.
Wow.
Yeah,
really?
That's recent, because a couple of things. One is diagnostic criteria has become clearer, and there's more awareness of what autism and Asperger's are, and professionals understand it a little bit better. But there are people who go through many years of life not really understanding, you know, why maybe they're not understanding people and the world around them.
And that's something we'd really like to talk about as a whole show, is adults with autism and sort of coping with it if you found out you've had it, and how you can make changes in your life or look for information that can help you better cope with it.
And we're planning to actually make that the theme of next month's show.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Because it's about quality of life, isn't it? And if you don't know what you have, the quality could be uncertain.
Absolutely.
Well, you can't treat something that you cannot define clearly. You know, if somebody gives you a bunch of diagnoses, and if you relate it even to a medical thing, it's like the doctor says you have, you know, cancer, asthma, you have all these things. And then he goes, and you can't just treat one of those things and expect everything to get better. So you really need to get clear about where the deficits are, even within the diagnosis, because while there are core deficits to autism spectrum disorders, you know, everybody's an individual and has different strengths and weaknesses, and also may need help in other areas.
Well, that totally makes sense. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Understanding Autism stars Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon. And Paul, I'm going to ask you a question when we come back about how the relationships with others improved after diagnosis, and I suspect I know the answer, and I'll be right back.
At Beerenbaum Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And this is Understanding Autism, starring Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon. And Paul, just before the break, I asked the question is, and I'll rephrase it a little bit, did the relationships with others improve after receiving the diagnosis, maybe because they understood you a little bit better and the situation?
I'm not sure I would immediately say they understood me a bit better. It's very hard for people to understand autism in a lot of ways because it's a different way of thinking, you know. If you ask someone to try to understand being left-handed, they might try writing with their left hand, but that doesn't convey it because they haven't been doing it their whole life. Their handwriting is much worse than yours is. They don't instinctually reach for things with their left hand or feel just the differences in day-to-day life. It's the same kind of thing, but if you're thinking, we're left-handed, as it were. But what it did give me was the opportunity to improve my relationships. Before I had the diagnosis, I didn't know what I was working with, so I had no tools to improve my relationships. I couldn't see what was going wrong or sort of analyze what was going wrong. So once I knew, I had a starting point, as I said, and my relationships could improve, and I could begin to describe autism to them so that some of them could relate better to that.
So that's a great comment, Kim. I mean, you've seen situations. Doesn't that understanding for the person who is on the spectrum and also maybe family and friends, that understanding probably has to diffuse something. Maybe they thought it was just a behavioral issue, mm-hmm. but it's way beyond, right?
Well, definitely. And Paul is very fortunate in that he can communicate his thinking very well and his needs and things that maybe are hard for him. Not everybody is on the spectrum is able to do it quite that well. But you're right in a sense that whether it's the person affected or the parents or the loved ones, clarity is power. And when you understand things clearer, you're able to communicate better overall and build knowledge base and relationships from there.
And that's your gifts and talents, right? Because you're bringing to families, to various people on the spectrum, information, tools, and techniques and ways to create a whole new path in their life.
Yeah.
You're shy. You're blushing. What is going on here? So when you agree,
well,
Paul?
Yes. Okay. I mean,
she's blushing.
No.
Yes.
No, I mean, that is, I mean, what I strive for is I want parents and loved ones to understand their loved ones who have autism so that they can grow together and learn together and have the best life experiences together that they can. And once people understand where deficits are and strengths are, it does change the relational dynamic. And it is really exciting to see where, you know, families who weren't able to relate to each other well are improving every day. And it does, I mean, this is their life. You know, so it's important to me that I keep that focus of quality of life and supporting people in continuing to grow.
That makes sense, Paul.
I don't have anything to add.
Yeah, see, I think it does.
I think that covered it very well.
It did.
Thank you.
Wow.
Thanks. Well, it's funny you bring up the whole family topic because that's one of the things that we wanted to discuss in terms of you find out, you know, your child has a diagnosis. We talked about don't panic, feel your feelings. It's okay to be afraid, but it's also important to you know, get it together a little bit and, you know, productively move forward. The other thing that is very important is to share with family what you're going through and about your child. And we talked a little bit about why that was so important. And one of the reasons is that you really are going to need a support system that is going to for yourself and for your child. Your child's going to need a support system regardless of, you know, what level of independence he or she ends up at, the more that family and friends understand them as life goes on and as they grow up, they're going to have people in their lives to learn from, interact with, and share life experiences with. So it's really important to keep your extended family in the loop.
And that sharing, I suspect, is part of the healing process, is it not?
Well, it does mean that more non-stressful interactions can come from different sources. I mean, for me, my ability to interact with one person generally is based on how long I've known them. I learn more about them. I learn more about the cues that I'm getting from them and everything. So, you know, the more people I'm around, the sort of better general picture and feel I've gotten. So, you know, it also just means less stressful environments. New people are stressful. So, you know, once the family knows the child with autism, and the child might be able to become comfortable around more of these people and able to expand their interactions and just what they can do.
So that's interesting. Is that the case with most people on the spectrum, where new people are stressful, or is that individual?
Well, in my experience, that's a pretty strong commonality.
Okay.
And I don't know that the word, I don't mean it in a negative sense necessarily. It's just sort of overwhelming. You know, from what I've seen and experienced, people report that it's overwhelming, maybe a little bit scary. If you're a child and you're meeting a new teacher or an instructor, you know, not knowing if you'll be able to meet the demands or understand the demands of a person, I mean, I think that those things can be scary, but I think it's mostly just not knowing if you can handle whatever's going to come up interactively.
So comfort could mean being familiar with the situation.
Well, familiarity is definitely a source of comfort. I mean, I think this is true for everyone on or off the spectrum, is that, you know, having a degree of predictability to your environment helps you feel more comfortable in that environment.
But also having family members that, while they won't understand exactly, because it's so different when you live with a person who has autism day to day, nobody can really fully understand what that's like. But when you help your extended family understand, you know, your affected child, it helps create connections that aren't going to manifest on their own a lot of times. Sometimes the person that's affected just doesn't have the tools or even know why it would be important to form relationships with extended family. And inadvertently, a disconnect can grow. And as people get older, it becomes lonely for the person with autism, and it also separates the family a little bit, which you definitely don't want to do, or it can, at least in some cases.
So this is why it's so important to have a clear understanding.
To share with your family.
Yeah, and yes. A support system. And what? How would you define a support system? I mean, are there things that you do, Kim, to help people understand what a good support system is? I mean, how would you define a good versus not effective support system?
Well, that's a good question. I think of it in pretty general terms too, just in life. You want a support system, people that will listen to you, people that respect what you're going through is difficult, people who don't try to offer you too much advice are usually better support people. Sometimes people think they can give advice and you know, overdo, just try this, or you're overreacting to this. Somebody that validates your feelings and gives you the space to share, I think those are people you want to cling to in a healthy way.
So you don't want people, like, fixing the problem. They want more understanding.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people's reactions, I mean, with good intentions, are we want to help, and fixing might be a part of that, but the best thing extended family can do is listen and be there and learn.
So you're really not just working with someone on the autism spectrum. You're probably, I'm guessing, working with the support system too, to teach them how to be an effective support system. Is that right?
That's part of what I do, and I love it when families are brave enough, and I know it can be hard. I mean, some families aren't comfortable disclosing. They may feel some embarrassment or shame or or guilt even. And I would just really encourage those families to be brave and to select maybe certain family members are better, you know, better fits to talk to than others, but not to shun the extended family due to any, you know, one emotion.
I'm sure everyone's, you know, different personality, different understanding, different time constraints, and that probably all can have an impact on whether their support system or whether the support system is effective.
Mm-hmm.
And all those factors probably come into play, and it's not a cookie-cutter approach.
Well, you know, that's true. And another very important factor that goes along these lines is making sure that you evaluate your marriage and your communication with your partner when finding out about a diagnosis. Asking maybe we need to go to counseling together for proactive reasons. How are we going to work through some of these challenges that we may face, and how do we feel about it, and are we blaming each other and things like that? Because people with autism need as strong of a foundation as possible. And it's actually fairly common, although I don't have the exact numbers. The divorce rate for parents who have kids with autism is very high.
Really?
It's very high. And unfortunately, it causes a lot of strain on a marriage. Maybe parents disagree on therapeutic approach or the way a parent's communicating, or maybe they just understand it differently, what autism is. And it's really important to get with your partner and really discuss things in a proactive way with good intentions, and remember that your goal is to improve the quality of life for your child and the family, and try to be on each other's team, because really you are on the same team. But it's easy to let panic and stress and fear destroy some of that union, so you have to be really careful about that.
So really there's a double benefit here, because if the marriage gets stronger, there's a side benefit, and the benefit translates to a better support system for your child.
Well, I mean, with almost any situation, you kind of want to create a positive feedback loop. If the family situation and the support group around them is better, then that creates improvement in the person, or helps foster improvement in the person who's suffering. And as they get better, that can sort of reinforce the people around him into saying, hey, we're having an effect, let's keep doing this. So, you know, you want to get the ball rolling, and hopefully it sort of begins to sustain itself.
So really, you can almost look at it, this might sound different, but you can almost look at it, when if someone's on the spectrum, it's a blessing overall, because it elevated and uplifted more awareness and maybe created a whole different family dynamics.
That certainly can happen. I think autism provides a person with an opportunity to really challenge themselves, not just with, you know, communication and higher level thinking and awareness, but patience and compassion and communication. And it definitely pushes you to another level.
And just dealing with something that you cannot relate to. I mean, most of the world, we can find some way to relate to it. But someone who thinks fundamentally different to us and sees almost all of their interactions in almost a fundamentally different way than us is something that is very hard for many people to relate to. It just requires being other than yourself.
That really totally makes sense. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Paul Loudon and Kim.
We'd like to take some calls after the break.
That's right. 602-296-3632. 602-296-3632. Call in. We'll give the number out again, but feel free to call in, because this is an important topic and it could just really create a nice environment at your family, your friends, and especially your children.
Are you able to ensure the safe driving and productivity of your employees? I'm Kara Lee with GPS Heroes, and with our plug-and-play GPS device, you can set geofences, get speeding alerts, and a full report card each week with driver reports and mileage, all to your computer or handheld device. It's easy to get and easy to use, in real time, with no service contracts. Just go to gpsheroes.org/21 and order yours today. That's gpsheroes.org/21.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Understanding Autism with Paul Loudon and Kim Isaac. And feel free to call in, of course. This is a great topic. It's an important topic, I should say. 602-296-3632. That's 602-296-3632. If you have any questions, Kim and Paul would be glad to answer anything that you have on your mind. Now, let's talk a little bit about some tips, because the theme here was if your child or children has received a diagnosis, what are some of the things that can be done, what you should expect? You have some tips on that, too.
Well, a couple of things, and just to review, we talked about not panicking, you know, remembering that your example, your actions, your affect will trickle down to the family, so you want to stay calm and proactive at the same time. You want to make sure and strengthen the support system you have and develop a support system. So making sure that you communicate well with your spouse, your other kids if you have them, and extended family. And it's also important to really share, you know, what you're going through and talk to people about it. People that you feel safe and comfortable with. So a couple of other things that I have seen to be helpful to people is being as organized as possible can be hard, but something that's been helpful is putting together a binder of, and maybe create your own sections in the binder of areas you're researching, information that, you know, you want to save or refer back to later. It helps to have everything in one spot. Also, I would suggest having a section in that binder of reports or notes from any doctors or psychologists that you've seen so that you have all of your child's information in one spot. It makes it a lot easier when you are researching therapies or meeting new professionals to have everything in one spot. So that's one thing that has seemed to help some of the people that I work with. It looks like we have a call.
We do have a call on line one. Let's welcome Gail from Escondido. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for putting me on.
Hi,
absolutely.
Gail.
Hi, Gail. This is Dave Isaac, and Kim and Paul are in
Hello,
the studio.
Gail.
Do you have a question?
Hi, Paul and Kim. Well, actually, I am a fellow RDI consultant and friend of Kim's, and I am just calling in to just show my appreciation for you doing this, because it is so needed, this education of the public, and it really is validating the work that I'm doing with my clients.
Well, good. I know, we're so glad to have, I'm so glad you called, and it helps me to have you call. I know professionals need to support each other too, and I'm so thankful that I have you in my support system, so I appreciate you listening.
Well, that's great. And I guess I did have one question. I was wondering if, and I'm listening with one of my clients right now, and we were both wondering what the divorce rate might be for people that are autistic. I haven't seen any statistics on that.
Well, that's a really good question, because I know earlier in the show I brought up the divorce rate for parents of a child that have autism, but the divorce rate for people on the spectrum themselves, I believe, is pretty high as well. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I will get them before the next show.
Okay, well, that sounds great. And I just really, really appreciate this. And my clients and their families are appreciating it too, and we just are excited about being with you today and hope we can make it every month.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Gail, for calling in. I appreciate it.
All the way from California.
And Paul, it's just wonderful to hear from someone that has autism and that is willing to share the way that you're sharing, and it just broadens all of our horizons and understanding.
Well, I'm definitely glad to be able to do what I can.
Well, thanks so much, and we'll keep listening.
Thank you so much, Gail.
Okay, bye-bye.
That was a sweet call. And you know what? Talk about a support system. There's living proof. I mean, other professionals in the field all giving their heart and soul to help other people. I like it.
Well, I feel very thankful. Gail is one of my best support people. She has such an amazing, caring, giving heart. She has a passion for working with adults like I do, and I am just so thankful that she supports our show, and I know that her clients in California listen, and I'm just hoping and praying that as we support each other, we can spread awareness to the community and keep helping people.
And I think that is good to tie back into our subject of the show, is looking for someone like Gail or Kim to help you along with the process, is find someone who's familiar with what you're dealing with and that you can work with, someone that's comfortable and feels reassuring to you.
And that brings up, you know, the next part, and that is along with the lines of our topic is, you know, so now you need to know, okay, so what am I going to be doing? You need to research therapies, and part of that is also researching the professionals behind the therapies. There are many therapies out there that target different things, and there are many professionals that have different approaches and different attitudes about autism and relationships, and it's really important that you find someone that you are comfortable with, that you don't let the professional take over your family or make you feel, if you ever have a doubt that something doesn't feel right, you absolutely, as a parent or a person on the spectrum, have the right and obligation to say something. So it's really important that when you're researching therapies and professionals, that you find something that feels right to you.
So how would you go about that? Or is that a different show? Because I think we did talk about that a couple months ago.
Well, finding a specialist can depend on a lot of things. I mean, depending on where you live, there may be local organizations that you can work through to find specialists. You can go online, as Kim mentioned, there's the RDI website at rdiconnect.com. Or just go online and do research in general. I mean, it can feel overwhelming. If you go online and you type in autism, Google will give you, I don't know, how million pages. And, you know, that first thought is like, this is too much information. But another thing is reassuring about that. This is the 21st century. We now know more about autism than we ever have at any point in human history, and we're moving forward with that. When you see those results, think, we know this much, that there is this much information out there for me to start to get a grip on this with.
And that's what makes this show so unique with both Paul and Kim in studio, really giving understanding, tips, explanations on, there are different therapies, there's different professionals out there. And this is a good source to get this information. And of course, it's archived, so you don't have to just listen right this second. You can go to breakradioshow.com, go to archive shows and click on Understanding Autism to get many of the past shows so you can get education. Isn't that a good idea, Paul and Kim?
We've actually talked about that outside the studio, that with our past shows, we're sort of, you may have noticed we talked about different therapies in the past, and now we've moved on to what do I do if my child is diagnosed. Next time we've got what we do if you're diagnosed. We're trying to work through some of the basic starting tips so that in our back shows there's a good references that you might be able to give to someone who might be able to use this information well.
And also, for people listening, our December show of 2010 focused on how to talk to others about autism, and that would be a really good reference to go back and listen to after this show if you're someone who's new to all of this, who wants to talk to people about your child's autism. I would recommend that you go back to the archive show in December, and that would be a really helpful one to listen to.
And again, if you're thinking about trying to pick out a therapy, our January show gives a quick overview of several of the major ones.
Right. But really, when you are researching therapies, I mean, it can be very overwhelming. You want to pace yourself. You want to, I am a big fan of having some kind of binder just so you have things you can organize. But also just remembering that as a parent, you are the authority on your child. And one of the things I've seen over the years is parents feel they have to surrender their parenting or their empowerment to a professional who they think maybe can help their child better than they can. And that's actually really not true. Parents are the best teachers for their kids. And I never want a parent to feel like they can't help their kids or learn to help their kids. So it's really important that you find a professional that values the family involvement, family systems, and tries to teach you how to interact with your kids and be a primary source of teaching.
And yeah, that's a good point, is that you're trying to reach balance where you're working with a professional, not having a professional do it for you, and not fighting with a professional, because you want someone who's an expert on the subject matter. You're going to a professional because this is something that you probably can't hope to know everything about without years of study. So you want a professional you can work with, not
collaboration.
Collaboration,
you want someone who will collaborate. And I tell my clients this too. I mean, I consider myself to be an expert in autism, but the parents I work with are experts on their children and their family. And if we work together from those standpoints, we can create some really powerful change. But the parents and the individuals I work with always have the final say and the most important say on anything I suggest. And I always encourage questions. And again, it needs to feel appropriate and right to you. And everybody's different. And what's a good fit, a fit for one person may be not a good fit for another. Thankfully, there are a lot of professionals out there, and there's someone for everyone.
So it sounds like, of course, it would be sort of an emotional time often for parents, and when they're selecting professionals, they might be in a vulnerable state. So check your own state, too. Wouldn't you suggest that to parents? And you did say be calm.
Well,
it's
be easy to say. I know it's a lot harder.
But it's important,
That's
right?
actually one of the core foundations of relationship development intervention, is really helping parents to position themselves in a place where they can be the most efficient, proactive advocates. And it's hard, and it's a process. And I've worked with people, and sometimes it takes parents a really long time to get there. And that's perfectly okay. Everybody needs to go at their own pace. If it takes a parent a year and a half to feel ready to do whatever the next step is, that's okay.
And you, said you've been talking about RDI quite a bit, and that is relational intervention development. You just said it.
Relationship development intervention, yes.
Oh, how did I say it? Did I say it backwards?
You swapped intervention and development, that's all.
Oh, okay.
Got all the words in.
I was getting creative there. Oh, Kurt's giving me the shame on you.
I think RID is not the best acronym ever, though.
That's right. Get RID. Okay. That's, RDI. You're right. I even wrote it differently. And when we come back from our break, we're going to continue our discussion with Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon, Understanding Autism. If you want to call in, 602-296-3632, 602-296-3632, and we'll be right back.
Reidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Reidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Understanding Autism with Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon. And we've been talking about all sorts of great information once you find your child or children has received a diagnosis. Now, you want to talk a little bit about family support groups. There's other, you know, you're not alone, in other words. There's places out there. There's groups of people, and it's often that sharing can help.
Yes. Well, we talked a little bit about creating your own support group within your family, whether it's your immediate family or extended family or friends. And also, there are support groups within the community for parents. And it's nice to know that they are growing and expanding. There are grandparents groups. There are dads groups. Mm. I have always had a passion to start a sibling group, so stay tuned on information for that. I would love to do that for siblings, because whether they talk about it or not, it definitely impacts the siblings in ways they maybe don't know how to articulate. But anyway, it's important to look for support groups in your community that, again, are good fits for you. Some support groups are very uplifting and positive and supportive, and there are groups that are a little bit, well, negative. So you want to be careful. I mean, you just want to surround yourself with people who are going to lift you up and encourage you to take proactive steps versus spend time hanging out in complaining or focusing too much on the cure itself. Is another big thing to think about is, as of right now, there is no cure for autism. And it's really important that you're always looking at where your child is, where you are, and how to move forward from there. That should be the focus. If you focus on a cure, you miss out on a lot of really valuable life moments, teaching moments, and critical developmental moments. So it's really important that you keep your focus on being mindful, staying on in the moment, moving forward systematically, and not that I'm opposed to a cure would be wonderful, but just remembering, if anybody tells you there's a cure, as of right now, there is none. So I'd be also very leery of any therapies or doctors that tell you they can cure your child, because as of now, unfortunately, that's not available.
Though, just on a more positive note, we are getting more and more research into the causes and the physical signs of autism through MRI scans. Symptoms. Or CT scans. No, MRI scans, I think they show up on some information that may help to better diagnose it in the future.
Right.
So we are growing in our understanding of the physiological side of autism. We don't have anything significantly solid yet, but there is definitely light moving forward that a cure may be possible in the far future.
So what I hear you're saying, Kim, is that if you focus on the destination and forget the day-to-day moments, that might not be the best way or where you place your focus. Focus on the process and just enjoy each day.
Well, enjoy, yes, but I don't mean it so much in just like such a positive thinking way. One of the core deficits for people that have autism is being able to think and process. And for Paul, it's a little bit different, but a lot of times it's really hard for these kids to sort of see processes. And what's hard is if you focus on a point A to point B, someone who's a very concrete thinker who isn't able to see the middle very well, you actually lose out on very valuable daily life teaching moments to actually teach what the middle looks like. And so it's really important that where your mind is, I mean, where your mind is what your behavior and your words are going to show. And you can certainly be teaching and modeling as much of a typical life, you know, thinking process as you can.
Well, what's a sample goal that you would give someone? I mean, what are some of the goals? You go over this I'm sure, and reinforce it. And a goal, of course, provides direction and motivation, I suspect. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the goals that someone might want to consider? And I know it's probably individually tailored.
It is individually tailored.
But maybe there's a range of certain things.
Well, you know, there's different categories of goals. There are experience sharing goals. There are social referencing goals. You know, dynamic thinking and problem solving goals. And depending on the individual, of course, you know, and I mean, this is why for everybody it's so different. But an example of an experience sharing goal, which is something that a lot of behavioral therapy doesn't focus on, but RDI does focus on, is working towards mutual enjoyment of a shared activity. And that's actually a goal. And it's broken down into, we can break them down into very small, it's actually a social emotional goal, but you can break it down really small. Because a lot of kids with autism, they may enjoy something on their own, like playing with their cars or their trucks or computers or whatever, but they don't necessarily understand or have an experience the value of a shared experience with a trusted partner. So for example, you and I, if you know, we wait a couple hours, the sun's gonna set, maybe you and I go stand outside and we can look at the sunset and both have emotional reactions to that and experiencing something that we both maybe share together verbally, or maybe we smile at each other. You know, we have a shared moment of connection. And a lot of times for kids on the spectrum, they aren't having those shared moments with people. They're having moments of enjoyment on their own. And experience sharing is a really big goal that we work on in RDI.
So how does that work? You got my curiosity on this one. How do you explain that, actually, to someone that's never experienced that?
Well, you don't explain. You actually set up opportunities, and you spotlight where sort of the juice is in that moment, is the connection.
Make them aware of right. something they maybe not have seen before or
right.
felt.
Right.
Wow.
It's not, some of these things you can't explain, you have to experience. And that's why slowing down, focusing on daily life is critical for teaching some of those things, because you have to experience how they fit into the world, how you fit into that. And another big deficit that people with autism have is being able to borrow the perspective of another person. And so in RDI, we have a slew of social referencing objectives to help teach kids and adults about, you know, I have my own mind, another person has their own mind, and, you know, when we're interacting and communicating, we're also, without even realizing it, taking account for people's perspectives constantly. And that's something that's a lot harder for people, for kids and adults with autism.
That is
so those are kind
huge.
Of the goals that we sort of steer towards in this particular therapy.
That's really big, though.
Mental processes. Yeah,
and that's a valuable, actually, skill set to be able to really look outside your own perspective. And would that be considered compassion? Would you define that as how to develop compassion, knowing what someone else is feeling?
I would almost go more with empathy than anything.
Empathy.
I mean,
okay.
Compassion, to me, at least just word choice wise, compassion is from the outside looking in, and empathy is shared.
Mm. Oh, nice. Yeah, that makes... Oh, nice.
My wingman.
That is very good.
I'm a bit picky about words sometimes, so
no,
I always
like
have
it.
A very specific meanings associated with words,
right.
Which, you know.
But that's actually a great benefit of... I mean, yes, that's good. Thank you for clarifying that. Yeah, because, I mean, the thing is there's a lot of misconceptions, too. Some people may think, oh, this person, child or adult with autism, just doesn't care, or doesn't have feelings. I mean, sadly, I've heard that from professionals. That's absolutely not true. They just make connections a little bit differently, and that doesn't mean they don't have the feelings. They may store them a little differently or attach something a little bit different, but every person with autism I've ever met has an extremely caring, sensitive, loving side, you know, and sometimes it doesn't maybe present itself the way that I'm used to seeing from everybody else I interact with during the day, but it's there.
So there's actually professionals out there that adopt a belief system saying they some on the spectrum don't have.
I've encountered honestly, okay, in 14 years, two people. I've met two professionals that have said that, and I don't talk to them.
Well, I don't blame you. Look at putting their belief system on and really setting the boundaries of what's possible is sad.
Well, it's just unfortunate because I'm a big fan of remembering that people are humans first, people first. And if you have a difficulty, a diagnosis, a disability, that comes second. We're all human. We all have the same basic needs and wants and desires. It's just a matter of understanding them, you know, differently sometimes.
You know, that's a great starting place because it expands possibilities and opportunities. And if someone becomes narrow-minded about what's possible, they're really that's going to direct.
They set the bar, and yeah. The bar will never go any higher. Yeah.
Oh, man, that's why it's so important, like both of you have said, watch who you pick as professionals.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, every professional, we talked about, you know, different therapies, and different therapies have different things to offer different people. I think that's true of professionals. I mean, some people have strengths in one area, you know, and maybe are weaker in another. So it's just important to just do research and ask questions and make decisions for your family that feel right to you.
That is so critical. I mean, without knowing some of these concepts, and today's show, I think, is something that would be really helpful for people to gain awareness.
And I also want people to know that if people out there listening in other states, I am based in Arizona. However, I know professionals all over the country, actually the world, I will say that. So if you want to email me with questions, or if you're in another state and you want to call somebody from sort of the same school of thought as I come from, please email me at autismwithexcellence@gmail.com, and I'd be happy to point you to a professional that I would respect and recommend in your area.
Also, if you have any questions you'd like to have read on the show, send them to that email address for Kim and I to answer.
Right. For Paul or myself, you can reach us both at that email address.
And in 60 seconds, do you have any Valentine's wishes? Either one.
I want to say happy Valentine's Day to my Rick. He's in the lobby, actually, watching the show. I just want to give him a shout out.
And I'd like to say happy Valentine's to Melly, who's back home in Houston, probably at class right now, but I think she'll listen to this later.
And happy Valentine's Day to Susan.
And happy Valentine's Day to everybody. And to Susan.
Okay, you know Susan. And to everyone, you're right.
Yes.
And go Coyotes. They're playing on Valentine's Day.
And happy birthday to Gail Noble. Today's her birthday.
Is it?
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes.
So next month, same time, same place, Understanding Autism.
Similar show, but for adults who've been diagnosed.
Specifically adults, yes.
Excellent. Thank you, Paul Loudon. Thank you, Kim Isaac. And we'll see everyone tomorrow. It's the Business Innovation Panel from 3 to 4. 2 o'clock, we have a special surprise. Everyone have a great Valentine's night.